From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation or around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Greg Little joins us. New discoveries in the search for Atlantis. Here's what's happening. Massive New Zealand quake has moved the country west. What an incredible story. Southern New Zealand has moved slightly closer to the east coast of neighboring Australia as a result of a massive earthquake last week off the country's South Island. The magnitude 7.8 quake centered in the ocean near Resolution Island twisted South Island out of shape and moved its southern tip 12 inches closer to Australia. Geologist Jim Birkeland on the line with us now. Jim, this is an incredible story, isn't it?
It sure is, and I especially feel associated with it because my wife and I were in New Zealand in December.
How big? I mean, we're talking about a 7.8, but how big does a quake have to take to move a landmass 12 inches?
Well, it often happened to a much greater extent than the Alaskan quake in 1964. It moved up and down 47 feet. And in the 1906 quake in San Francisco, the San Andreas moved 21 feet.
Oh, my
sideways.
Gosh.
So you do get immense movements, but this is unusual in that it was in the fairly quiet part of New Zealand on the Atlantic side, on the Indian Ocean side, and the Sea of Tasman, actually, before Australia. But this is amazing, and I was looking in the records here that this is the biggest quake since 1931. And when the big one happened in Napier, 7.8 quake, and that was on the day of the full moon.
Yeah, here we go again.
The perigee.
Yeah, that's
and,
true.
And so the two events were only 22 hours apart, and it was close to an eclipse time, but it wasn't. This one, I actually opened up my window for all of my subscribers on July 19th. And the actual quake was on the 15th. And by my rules, I was a day off.
Jim, some people here on the West Coast are afraid that California will simply break off and fall into the Pacific Ocean. Gosh. Is this possible?
Absolutely impossible.
Good. You promise.
Yeah. And when people from the East Coast, they talk about California going to break off. And I say, well, if you've seen all those wind farms here in California,
yeah.
Well, they're just going to turn on all those propellers and pull us right back. So we don't worry about that.
We shall see. Jim Birkeland's website, syzygyjob.com. I've got to spell it for you. SYZYGYJOB.com. Jim, again, thank you. General Motors posted a 22% global sales drop from a year earlier for the first 6 months of 2009 amid the economic slowdown and the automakers slide into bankruptcy. GM said its global first half sales, which include brands the automaker is trimming from its lineup already, fell 21.8% to 3.55 million vehicles. The automaker sales in the second quarter fell 15.4% to a little less than 2 million vehicles. President Barack Obama said a broad healthcare overhaul was critical to U.S. economic recovery and has urged Congress to take advantage of momentum behind the reform package, despite doubts about the plan, even among fellow Democrats. In a televised evening news conference, President Obama said the biggest driving force behind the federal deficit was skyrocketing healthcare costs for the government's Medicare program of health care for the elderly and Medicaid for the poor. Well, I don't agree with that. I think the biggest driving force behind the federal deficit is greed and corruption that seems to be going everywhere. The amount of money they spend for things. They spent millions of dollars, for example, for ham for the needy, which is important, but they pay twice as much for it than what you can get going to your own supermarket. The poor economy is taking a toll even on the dead, with an increasing number of bodies in Los Angeles County going unclaimed by families who just can't afford to bury or cremate their loved ones. At the county coroner's office, which handles homicides and other suspicious deaths, 36% more cremations were done at taxpayers' expense in the last fiscal year over the previous year. The county morgue, which is responsible for the indigent and others who go unclaimed, saw a 25% increase in cremations the first half of this year over the same period a year ago. These demands on the County Crematorium have been so high that earlier this year, officials there stopped accepting bodies from the coroner, just stopped. The coroner's office since has contracted with two private firms for about $135,000 to handle the overflow. European Union countries have failed to authorize the sale of Monsanto's genetically modified corn. The European Commission said an expert panel did not reach an agreement to approve the corn, and now the debate will head to a higher level with ambassadors and ministers. Federal health officials say they have found cancer-causing ingredients in electronic cigarettes, despite manufacturers' claims the products are safer than tobacco cigarettes. The FDA said testing of products from two leading electronic cigarette makers turned up several toxic chemicals, including a key ingredient in antifreeze. The FDA scientists said they tested 19 varieties of cigarettes, many of which contained fruit and candy flavors. Electronic cigarettes produce a nicotine-type mist absorbed directly into the lungs. Most can easily pass as a tobacco cigarette with slim white bodies and glowing amber tips. They even emit what looks like puffs of white smoke. Manufacturers have touted the products as a healthier alternative to smoking because no burning is involved and there's no hazardous cocktail of cancer-causing chemicals. Regulators said they already halted 50 shipments of electronic cigarettes at the border, but those actions have been challenged in federal court by the manufacturers. Those products are made primarily in China. Word of the wise, just check the ingredients with anything you buy. The Senate has rejected letting people carry hidden guns in 48 states if they have a concealed weapon permit in any one of them. It's a victory for gun control advocates in a Democratic-controlled Congress that has been friendly to the gun lobby. A strong majority of the Senate, in a 58-39 vote, supported the measure, which would require most states to honor the concealed weapons permits issued by other states, but the tally has two votes short of the 60 votes that were needed to add the measure as an amendment to a defense bill. So it doesn't look like it's going to happen. The Drug Enforcement Agency's raid of Michael Jackson's personal physician's Houston office has focused on powerful drugs. A lawyer for Jackson's doctor, Dr. Conrad Murray, says police were searching the clinic for evidence of manslaughter. Phoenix police made a startling discovery. When they pulled a motorist over for reckless driving, they found a toddler boy there wearing a diaper full of methamphetamines. Man, can you believe that? Newly analyzed remains suggest that a modern human killed a Neanderthal man in what is now Iraq between 50 and 75,000 years ago. The finding is scant but tantalizing evidence for a theory that modern humans may have helped kill off the Neanderthals. The weapon, a thrown spear. Michael Cremo, author of Human Devolution and Forbidden Archaeology, on the line with us. Now, how remarkable is this discovery, Michael?
It's pretty interesting. Nothing like a murder or cannibalism to draw attention to an archaeological discovery,
true,
that's for sure. Let's look at the evidence that they really have here. It's not a new discovery that they're talking about. They're talking about some archaeologist who re-examined some Neanderthal rib bones that were originally discovered in the 1950s in the Zagros Mountains area of northern Iraq. So they saw what appeared to be some kind of wounds on these rib bones, and they determined they must have been made by some kind of a projectile weapon, a thrown spear with a stone tip, for example. And how do they get the idea that it was a modern human being and not another Neanderthal,
true,
who threw it? Well, it's because of a theory that they have. This Neanderthal individual lived about 50,000 years ago. They believe that humans like us, capable of making these throwing
beers first came into existence about 100,000 years ago. So this is the reason why they say they believe it was a modern type human that killed this Neanderthal ape man, because they believe the Neanderthals did not have the intelligence to make these throwing spear kinds of weapons. Only humans like us.
What does this do, Michael, to the theory of evolution? As so many scientists have always thought, there was that evolution from chimpanzees to apes to, you know, Cro-Magnon to Neanderthals to humans.
Well, here's what it does. I'll give you an example. It throws a whole monkey wrench into the whole
literally
that they've gotten. Here's an example of what it does. Let's take them at their word that only humans like us are capable of making these kinds of throwing spears.
Okay.
In 1997, some German archaeologists found throwing spears shaped like modern Olympic javelins, obviously weapons meant for throwing, for killing animals or perhaps other human beings. These were found in layers of rock over 430,000 years old. So that means if they want to say only human beings like us were capable of making things like that, that means they have to say humans like us were existing over 400,000 years ago. Of course, they didn't want to do that.
Right.
So in that case, they said, oh, it must have been an ape man who made, you know, the throwing spears over 400,000 years ago. So, see, this is the kind of trouble that they get into.
They get trapped, don't they?
They get trapped by their own theories, because that would mean, well, if you want to say an ape man made those spears that were found 400,000 years ago, why couldn't it have been another Neanderthal or ape man who made and used the spear that was used to kill this this Neanderthal dead, wounded person that they found in Iraq?
Michael Cremo's theories, of course, go way back, if you have heard him on Coast to Coast, where he believes humankind existed millions and millions of years ago. Compelling, and it's time to get him back for a full program. His website, mcremo, C-R-E-M-O.com. You can get all these news guests. Their websites will be on our Twitter feed, twitter.com/coasttocoastam, and you can get their websites there. Gidget the Chihuahua, the bug-eyed, big-eared star of the 1990s Taco Bell commercials, who was a diva on and off the screen, has died. She was 15.
Yo quiero Taco Bell.
Gidget suffered a massive stroke late at her trainer's home in Santa Clarita, California, and had to be euthanized. Though Gidget was a female dog, they had her look like a male dog in the commercials. British men find the prospect of asking a woman to marry them almost as scary as swimming with sharks. According to a new survey, 4 out of 5 men were so petrified of proposing that they preferred to forego tradition and wait for their girlfriends to propose to them. Of those polled, 28% ranked swimming with sharks as the scariest thing to do, closely followed by 23% who considered proposing marriage the most frightening. And a detailed, functional, artificial human brain can be built within the next 10 years, according to a leading scientist. Henry Markram, director of the Blue Brain Project, has already simulated elements of a rat brain. He told the TED Global Conference in England that a synthetic human brain would be of particular use finding treatments for mental illnesses. In a moment, fuzzy logic, heaven in a chip, noise, Bart Costco joins us as we talk about the creation of an artificial human brain. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. It's Nano Time with Bart Costco this hour. Dr. Bart Costco, professor of electrical engineering, noise, heaven in a chip. He's written a book on fuzzy thinking, nanotime as well. Here he is. Bart, how are you? Welcome back.
Good to be back, George. How are you?
Okay, this is an incredible story. Artificial human brain, they believe, can be built within the next 10 years. Now, what do they mean by this, though? What is the artificial human brain?
Well, right now, it's just one column in your neocortex. We have, these are stacked neurons in the brain. We have, humans have about a million, maybe 2 million of these columns. And if you put 10,000 processors together, each representing a single neuron, you get what Dr. Markram claims is a pretty good approximation of one column, which may have a lot of good purposes in terms of testing out medicines. It's a pretty far cry, though, George, from the whole brain. And my concern with the 10-year argument, which is based on Moore's law, which says that computer chip density doubles about every 2 years, and it seems to be holding up, and I think will hold up for at least 10 years, is that in 10 years, you only have doubled five times. 2 to the 5 is 32, so that cuts it down by 32, but in 20 years, for example, which I think is more realistic.
I see. Okay, good point.
2 to the 10 is doubled 10 times, so that's 1,000 times. And so the kind of computer, as Dr. Markram says, that you would need today, and he's using great big IBM supercomputers called Blue Gene computers, would take, to model human brain, would take several football fields, and the annual cost of that in the power, the megawatts, would be at least $3 billion. But if you keep chopping that down, not 10 years, but 20, and for example, in 40 years, if that were the case, if the doubling continues, then you would divide that by a whole million. And I think long before that, we'll have this rough computational power. And that's, again, a far cry from having an actual human brain. But it's very interesting in terms of what's called computational neuroscience, because no one's ever really done this before with this many processors and this kind of fast computing power.
You know, Bart, if I had to stop and start my brain as much as I have to do my computer, I'd go nuts. What would they use an artificial human brain for?
Example is pharmaceutical testing. Other examples would be the effects of stroke. For example, if you start removing neurons, which happens pretty much after birth, and removing synapses as well. For example, if you take a shot of whiskey, that kills off a fair number of those. What effect does that have on the whole? How many synapses do you have to take out before functionality, the ability to do arithmetic, for example, falls? There's a lot of pattern recognition that my colleagues and I have found in neural networks that will go on just fine, fuzzy kind of computation, if you pull out half of the wires, but you have to pull them out at random. And you can't just knock out a big hole in the middle. And those kinds of tests, I think, it's valuable for.
Would you say that their work in trying to develop an artificial human brain is like Nobel Prize in science type work?
If they pull it off, George, if they pull it off and they have the right crew of people, this is a big team in Switzerland coupled with IBM. It's really a big European project. Very smart people, well-credentialed. It's very real science. And it's the oldest idea around. Let's try to model an individual neuron. You know, the brain has at least 100 billion of those, maybe a trillion of those, roughly the number of stars in our Milky Way galaxy, and dedicate a lot of computational power to each one. Now, those are still software models, but they're pretty good models now. And each one has about 10,000 connections to other neurons. So in the past, we just couldn't do that. When I helped develop the first neural conference with the IEEE in 1987, we could only model maybe 10 to 100 neurons. And beyond that, everything started breaking down, trying to capture in a chip. So the idea that you could take the best computer, parallel computers of today, turn them loose on the raw models that we have and see what happens, see if it scales up, is pretty impressive. And to the first order, they have some basic pattern recognition results. They don't have a brain yet. It's not talking. It's not held a computer. But in theory, if Moore's law holds up, and if the power grid holds up and all those kinds of things, they may have a very impressive computational unit in 10, 20, or 30 years.
What's new with Bart Cusco?
Always publishing papers, George. For example, I have a new paper coming out with a colleague on noise and neurons. We were intrigued to see to what extent the neurons in your brain use the noise from the other neurons in your brain. So again, if there's 100 billion neurons talking and chattering away, that's a lot of noise. And it's interesting to see that brains almost certainly would use would work that way, that properties simply don't hold for individual neurons. They only hold for collective networks of neurons in terms of the noise ability for that. So that kind of research. What I think we could do here, and I've written about in Heaven and Chip and elsewhere, is something like a brain comb. It's often been called in science fiction. But now with modern nanotubes, not carbon tubes, but inorganic tubes, the ability to comb your brain in some way to get an estimate, like a fingerprint, a kind of brain print, first for backup purposes, and then for other purposes, to directly manipulate the brain, record your memories, and enhance it.
Bart, let's talk about chips when we come right back. Plus, we'll open up the phone lines. Our guest this hour, Dr. Bart Costco on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, the annual Comic Con in San Diego is getting underway on Thursday, and it will include a zombie parade that night through downtown San Diego. Our Coast to Coast big affiliate there, KOGO, K-O-G-O, will be attending the very unique convention and posting pictures on their website, KOGO.com. In the keyword section, just type in Coast to Coast, and it'll take you straight there. So have some fun if you're down in the San Diego area. Next hour, Greg Little joins us as we talk about the search for Edgar Cayce's Atlantis and Mound Builders, Edgar Cayce's forgotten legacy as well, and also his work on mounds and earthworks in the United States and elsewhere. And then when we come right back, let's take your phone calls with Dr. Bart Costco as we talk about nanotime, fuzzy logic, heaven in a chip. And we're with Bart Costco. Bart, when the day comes where they come up to you and say it's time to implant a chip in you for identification purposes or to be able to buy and sell, are you going to do it?
I think I would pass on that, George. Yeah. There are other reasons I might want one, in particular to back up part of your memories or consciousness, but not for the purposes of third-party ID.
I would pass, too. It's going to happen, though. Aren't they going to try to push that one day?
I think it'll happen in subtle ways. I mean, it's already happening in the products we buy.
Right. Like it's everywhere, yeah.
But it is a little tougher to get inside the skin. I think it's more likely people simply would opt for it. It may have a lot of benefits, after all.
What if they start doing it in hospitals when babies are born? What if that becomes the new mandate?
Well, I just hope we don't live to see that. I don't think that'll happen in this country. It could happen in others. But I think it's more likely people would just do it because, again, it's like carrying a medical bracelet, but much higher quality. And there's a lot of advantages to that. But just like using a cell phone, you identify where you are and where you're speaking from at the time. That would happen as well. I don't think it would be imposed by our form of government. Of course, we may well be wrong about that.
True.
I think more likely people would opt for it in a kind of couch potato way.
I do like the possibilities, though, of downloading memory into a chip. And then we can clone each other, Bart, and then we'll be able to live forever.
Maybe not forever, but a substantially longer time than we can now, to a kind of engineering approximation of forever.
They're still waiting for this for baseball great Ted Williams. His head is down in some cryogenic chamber, and they're waiting to download his memory into a chip so they can clone him.
I fully understand that, and I think Ted did the right thing. So that's I'm in the great minority. There are, for example, George, about 150,000 people dying every day, and only about 1,000 actually signed up for that kind of cryonic suspension. As I understand it, fewer than 100 actually in it, including Ted Williams.
Well, they've just got his head, too. That's all. They, I guess, cast away the rest of him. But let's go to Russ in Viejo, California. Hey, go ahead, Russ. Get us going.
How you doing? I was wondering, I ran across the artificial intelligent game, and it changed the rules on me.
How so?
Well, I was beating them so bad that the game actually turned everybody against me.
That's the kind of game you like, right?
Well, no, but the thing was, is that I went through the archives in my mind, and the guy only mentioned in his mind that this guy walked up to him and says, "Hey, what happened if he beat you?" And he goes, "Oh, I just changed the rules." But he didn't write it in the program.
How did this happen?
His thought alone transferred to the program.
That's weird. Bart, have you heard of anything like this?
Well, Russ, I don't think the thought was transferred to the program directly, but it certainly is the case that games are smart and that you program a set of conditions and they watch what you do. And if you always turn to the right, for example, it will take that into account and try to trick you by turning to the left. And so it might look like someone's thoughts were encapsulated that way, but it is ultimately complex patterns of stimulus and response.
What is fueling, Bart, this incredible rapid-fire growth of technology?
It's, I think, Moore's Law. As we digitize things and keep cutting in half the density of, or increasing, doubling the density of computer circuits on a chip, we have immense powers, George, that we're really not using. For example, as you know, this is the 40th anniversary of the moonwalk.
That's
and
right.
Our rockets today are really not a whole lot different from the rockets 40
no.
years ago.
Except the computers are.
That's the only difference, the information. The chemistry is basically the same. The physics is the same. But the maybe it's doubled or quadrupled, but since then, and we've had this million-fold increase, a million-fold increase in the power of computation in those 40 years. And so we obviously have things like GPS and a very different navigation computer system. That's what's different. And a lot of applications don't require a lot of it. Games are kind of interesting because they do require a lot of audiovisual response. And things like modeling the human brain and sensory functions do. But so first order, we have much more computer power than we tend to use, but we're able to do increasingly complicated sensory and even tactile functions. And I think you'll see more of that in medicine, for example, coming. But the answer to your question is to speed up in computation.
Cincinnati, Ohio, Mike, east of the Rockies. Hi, Mike.
Hello, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have a question, Bart, about artificial intelligence and the concept of morality and altruism. Obviously, we learn a lot from not just our experiences, but our failures, our pains.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the current thinking on that and how would that apply to this technology?
Yeah, I think the game theorists have won the day, Mike. And there's something called an ESS, or an evolutionarily stable strategy. It's based on the Nash equilibrium. If you saw the movie A Beautiful Mind about John Nash, it's that concept. That's at the heart
good
of
movie.
A lot. Yeah, it's a very good movie. A lot of concepts in social science. And so the idea is that something evolves or occurs if and only if it's a Nash equilibrium. I'll give you an example from an op-ed of mine that you can see on my webpage that appeared in the LA Times and elsewhere. Now, this goes way back to Jean-Jacques Rousseau 200 years ago called the stag game. And
sure.
If you have four people lost in the woods and they can either catch a rabbit or a deer, but the catch is this. You can eat the rabbit, catch a rabbit by yourself, but it's really not enough for you protein-wise. But the only way you can get a deer is if all four cooperate. So without a government, without someone saying this is the right or wrong thing to do, you will go for a rabbit if the other three are doing that. Because there's no incentive to switch to a deer, you couldn't get one. But on the other hand, if three of them are going for a deer, you have an incentive to switch from going from a rabbit to behave what appears to be altruistically to help the others. It's really selfish, though, and get the deer. And that's a new Nash equilibrium.
In this technology, though, if we're actually recreating what we believe the brain to be to the best of our abilities with great intentions, and we're using the same technology, making, let's say, multiple brains, a series of brains, what factors will play into making individuality and the way each of those brains behave?
Oh, that's
doing an experience.
A real tough one in my book, Heaven and a Chip, deals with that, and is also an essay of that on my website. But exactly right. When you start having several brains that can talk to one another, to get away from the skulls and talk in a telepathic way, which you'll be able to do once we have real computer uploads and chip implants, the future generations will certainly do that. You then get what's called a dynamical system. And it behaves like a big neural network, each person being like an individual neuron, and you get collective equilibria. Now, we don't know what that would be like. We know that they would occur. But that would be true global consciousness. And actually, we know what would happen, but don't know what the sensation of that would be like or what that kind of complex perception would be like. But I suspect you'd be able to listen to and appreciate much more sophisticated music than we can today.
At what point, Bart, will people be able to go to the robot store and pick up a robot and communicate with it, chat with it, go out with it? I think I'll stop right there.
I think that there would be a big demand for the letter. And I don't buy the robot line of reasoning, George. I have an op-ed on my webpage criticizing the movie AI and a lot of other movies like that where we try to get machines to think like us rather than the other way around. Robots certainly have a function doing dangerous tasks and other things. But I think we want more like the powers of a computer, not to mimic our own lumbering walk and gait and the problems of revision that the robot has. You want to be able to think not 1,000 times faster, but 1,000,000 or 1,000,000,000 times faster. You want to think in nanotime, as I call it, entitled the novel Nanotime That. And you'll be able to do that when all or a substantial portion of your brain is backed up or enhanced with a computer chip. And forget the robots. I think you'd just be the ultimate kind of couch potato, but with immense powers, immense sensory powers, and the ability to imagine things and create entire worlds, in effect, in your mind, and to communicate with others, not in the internet, but in a kind of mind net. And I don't think robots will be a part of that.
The one thing it won't have a soul, Bart. It won't have
that. I would argue that it will. I mean, if the soul...
Wow.
Well, what is the soul now, or the self? It's a pattern of consciousness. It's a kind of music played by the brain. And the brain is 3 pounds of meat. Well, we can do better than that, George. We can have not 3 pounds of meat, but we can have very powerful microprocessors or plasma devices or whatever it will be, as very elaborate patterns that make up individual identity, the self, the consciousness. And that will be something that you can speed up and indeed replicate. I mean, you get new problems, for example. You could wake up with 5 copies of yourself or 5 million copies of yourself. And that's a problem that the soul has never had to address, the divisibility.
Do you believe consciousness exists beyond the physical brain?
No.
Aha.
I'm one of those guys. I think Democritus got it right in ancient Greece when he said there's only atoms and void. At the same time, again, I think we can approximate, again, an awful lot of that, all the way down to what most of us would mean by heaven, and almost an indefinite lifespan. Again, if you're thinking at chip times, at nano times, a million, billion, maybe a trillion times faster than now, then 1 minute of current time is going to be not just a year, it's going to be centuries, and you have a lot of minutes left. If I could just give you an example.
Sure.
I had a sports injury, went to a neural expert recently to get a nerve conduction test, and it's a painful thing. They stick needles in you and they measure the nerve response. And I found out, like most people, that my nerves conduct about 50 meters per second. And that same kind of relatively slow speed throughout the body is the basis for current consciousness or soul. We can speed that up dramatically. We don't have to rely on what natural selection has thrown up by happenstance over hundreds of millions of years.
Next up, let's go to San Diego, California, west of the Rockies. Hey, Steve, go ahead.
Well, you can create an artificial mind, and then you can teach it all the world's history and the biographies of all the great men or art and culture. Instead, they turn around and decide to make this new electronic brain insane. Is it just me, or is there something wrong with that?
I don't think the brain is insane. I don't think it's smart enough for that. And I'm also not quite sure what insanity is other than a failure of the circuitry here. But I think the first order, a lot of us would like to have that kind of knowledge of art and history, if only as a chip implant.
Okay. Thanks. William in Las Vegas, you're up. First-time caller. Hi, William.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Go ahead.
I just wanted to call and comment on the smart chips. I mean, I think it would be great for, you know, for us to produce robots with consciousness and whatnot, but, you know, I'm in the military. I work side-by-side with robots constantly, and, I mean, if we allow them to have a consciousness, you know, they're not going to make the same decisions as they would if they didn't have one. Also, you know, I don't mean to sound perverse, but, I mean, the smart chips would be every guy's dream, but I think the government would definitely take advantage of that situation. I personally wouldn't be comfortable with it, but I also don't think that, you know, everybody else wants to be herded up and, you know, told to do what to do. So I don't know. That's my personal opinion on it.
All right, Mark. I think you've touched on something, and as a lawyer, this disturbs me. The minute you have any kind of computer backup or implant, that's coming. It's coming very fast. You have an audit trail, and not just the government, just your neighbor when you get in a car wreck. That's something that may well be admissible to go back and play it back. You know, what you find about in court often is intent, the mental state. That's going to look very different if we can play back portions of the chip. And then when it comes to criminal proceedings or the notion of a quote-unquote hate crime, the ability to take information available on your chip, almost certainly discoverable under the current rules of evidence, is kind of frightening.
Okay, thanks. Let's go to Paul in Illinois, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Paul.
Hello, doctor. I was hearing what you were saying about this sort of like a internet of the mind. Where
MindNet, yes.
Where each individual would be a single neuron in a global brain?
Yes.
That would be a very dangerous thing. First of all, not everyone could take it. There would be some parts would be subject to the greater parts. That is to say, you would have people who would be under the control of others, like it was in Village of the Damned. Some would actually burn out like fuses in an electrical circuit.
But just a second. If each person had omnipotent-like powers, no one could trick the other. Everyone knew everything. No one could take advantage of one another. They would only participate in the mind net if they wanted to.
Yes, but the thing is, if they were involuntarily incorporated into this matrix, you would have stronger parts and weaker parts.
Well, that might be a problem, if you're involuntarily put into it.
Yes.
But I would think most people would want to plug in for the same reason they want to log online today. It would be irresistible
to think, to find out, I think, what everyone else is doing, and just to achieve that next level in true global consciousness when you can put all these minds together. But there would also, no doubt, be holdouts who would fence off, and quite reasonably so, and keep their privacy.
Bart, paint a picture for us 10 years from now. What are things like?
Looks like today, but the cell phones are better, the computers are faster and a whole lot cheaper, and there's a lot less privacy.
You see, a lot of people text nowadays. Do you see the time where you can talk into your cell phone and just say what you want and it just sends it?
I think a lot of speech translation software is there. As a professor, I have to tell you, George, I don't look forward to that day. It's bad enough for these cell phones going off in class. But at least when they're texting and students are doing that all the time, they're not completely disruptive.
Well, that's true. Let's go back to California, west of the Rockies. Scott, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Yeah, hello, George.
Hi.
Oh, nice talking to you. Second time I've tried, second time I've gotten
good
through.
For you.
My question's kind of a basic one. On a lot of things, you hear people say that the brain uses a certain percentage of its capacity to function. And I always would look at a computer and see that it would be like in the temporary, it's not on, but a light's blinking, that it's, if you hit a key, that it would turn on and start the machine up. And my question is, what capacity and how do they figure this of percent of the brain do we actually use? And is it merely that the brain actually will use 100% of our brain? It's just we're not able to access.
There's 100%. An old wives' tale that says it's 10% of it, but don't you believe it. The brain stores about a billion bits of information, or 10 to the 18, and it processes at an incredible rate, though you may not be consciously aware of it, about 10 to the 16 bits or a million bits, billion bits per second. It's just an astronomical amount of data that's processed, on something on the order of that, 500-plus petabytes is called. And again, you're not aware of that. We think in a serial way, but at the same time, there's an awful lot of subconscious or below-conscious processing, just sensory stuff that you habituate to, the color of the room and the smells and all the complicated processing, maintaining your balance, the contraction of your muscles. Your brain is going 24/7 and using all of that. It can do many other things than it's currently doing, but don't believe that the brain is not fully operational all the time.
If we had a brain race between Einstein and a computer, who would win? The computer, by far?
The computer would win on any kind of direct calculation, like an adding machine calculation. When it came to pattern recognition, today Einstein would still win. He could still recognize someone's face in an image better than most well-programmed computers.
And I bet he would have beaten the original computers.
And I think he would have done that to it first.
Yeah. Next up, let's take Robert, New Iberia, Louisiana. Got about a minute, Robert. Go ahead.
Yes, hello. Hi. Listening, I'd like to expound on that point that the other gentleman made. The scenario of a collective consciousness through the use of advanced computers sounds sort of like the Borg from Star Trek.
I mean,
we don't know what this one consciousness would want. Maybe it would need to have more beings included into it in order to exist and to become even more powerful, and in doing so, it would not allow freedom to leave from that consciousness, and also creating an artificial brain, that's another problem, because who knows, you could have like from this Terminator movie, what is it, Skynet? Something that could become self-aware with free will and consciousness of its own, and it could see human beings as its enemy.
I don't think science will stop, though, Bart, will it?
It won't stop. And by the way, I don't think we're going to design computers to have endocrine systems or hormones. I'm not worried about the Skynet phenomenon. And again, in a kind of mind net, everybody is omnipotent, like a little computer god. And they won't know all the facts. No one can fool anybody, and they participate only if they want to do that. And I would suspect they'd want to do that.
All right, Bart.
We just don't know.
Thank you so much. Bart Costco, as we talk about scientists saying that they'll get to an artificial brain in about 10 years. Up next, Greg Little, as we talk about Edgar Cayce's Atlantis on Coast to Coast AM.